You're listening to Australia's national youth radio station, Triple J. For more info, go to triplej.net.au.
Back on Triple J.
This afternoon on Hack, we're taking a look at how you get your music, your TV and your movies now, and how you're going to be getting them in future. Hi, Kate O'Toole here. Welcome to Hack this Thursday, Arvo. Of course, you might not even be hearing Triple J this afternoon. You might be podcasting it from your computer in a few days' time, which is pretty much what we're on about today. Downloading, it's changing the way you can get Triple J. But what about other things besides the radio? More and more, your computer is going to be your gateway to music, TV and movies instead of just a place to check your emails. Of course, you can download heaps of content for free at the moment. But is that going to change? Give us a call if you download music, movies or TV. We want to know why you do it and if you'd be willing to pay anything for it in the future. 1300 055 36. But first, a little bit of history. Michael Atkin has taken a look at how downloading got started with just music and what people are doing now.
Right now, there are at least 9 million people downloading TV, music and movies free of charge. And that doesn't include people on YouTube or BitTorrent. So how did we get to this point? Well, back in 1999, Napster sprung up offering users a central database of files to download free of charge. At its peak, it boasted 80 million users, but it didn't last long. By 2001, it was gone, destroyed by legal action. The legal fight was led by worldwide record companies and trumpeted by musos like Lars from Metallica, who were furious at people using Napster, likening the breach of copyright to robbing an artist's bank balance.
Give me fuel, give me fire, give me that which I desire. Ooh.
My name's Nick Muldoon and I download predominantly movies and music. I've been downloading for a number of years, probably since I was about 12 or 13. I'm 22 now, so for 10 years. I have in the vicinity of 10,000 albums. I have in my movie collection about 500 DVD quality films. My flatmate, I download West Wing for the both of us to watch, and we both watch it separately.
But the millions spent by record companies on legal action didn't stop the downloaders. Peer-to-peer networks sprung up, allowing users to share content between individual computers rather than hosting it on one central database. Locally, Kazaa was the big player, claiming 4 million users worldwide, but legal action soon swamped the service. By 2005, most Kazaa users had simply moved on.
Hi, my name's Jeremy. I've been downloading since probably 1995, I guess.
Let's talk about television, because that's where you do your downloading now.
Yep.
Why?
Basically because the shows that I want to watch aren't either aired in a timely fashion in Australia, or they're not aired at all.
Have you had a show that you've been hanging out for and then all of a sudden it gets pushed back or it doesn't come on?
Yep. Battlestar Galactica, for example. There was a pre-miniseries. They showed that. They showed the first season of it. And there was a huge gap between those two events. They started showing at prime time and then it obviously didn't rate, so they moved it back to like 11 o'clock at night. And then they just said, no, we're not showing season two. So I just downloaded season two.
But that didn't mean the downloaders disappeared. They flocked to other peer-to-peer sites like eDonkey, LimeWire and FastTrack. In Australia, users were free from prosecution, unlike elsewhere. American downloaders weren't as lucky, with at least 14,000 sued by the Recording Industry Association of America, including teenagers, dead people and grandmothers. That included four college students who were up for about 100 million, but ended up settling for about 60 grand.
My name's Paul, I'm 24 and I live in Melbourne, and I download movies, music and television shows.
Now you reckon you download more because you've got young kids, you can't get out to the movies?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, you can say that it's not so easy to go to the cinemas with kids, and even if I do get a chance to have someone look after the kids, catching up on sleep's usually a little bit more important than going out to the movies. So it's not so much shows that you can't get in Australia, it's just stuff that you can get earlier in from America. Like my partner likes Grey's Anatomy, so start downloading the next season of that before it comes out here.
Chief, how bad is it? It looks bad. I'm here. I can help. If there's anything surgical, I can help.
To get around this legal action, people started downloading in torrents. Instead of downloading one file, a user downloads thousands of individual pieces of files from different sources. BitTorrent is a fave, especially for movies and TV shows. And depending on your internet connection, you could have a movie in around an hour's time. But the movie industry wasn't happy about that and went after the sites, forcing some of them to close. But it hasn't stopped people reacting against the dodgy time slots created by the TV networks. The Chaser team found that out the hard way when their show, The War on Everything, got lumped on a Friday night. Here's Chris Taylor.
You know, it was inconvenient to watch it on the ABC because it was like, you know, 11 o'clock on a Friday night on a good week. And so people were looking for other ways to watch the show. And, yeah, so fans must have uploaded it onto BitTorrent for other people to then download. And we thought, this is ridiculous. I mean, we worked reasonably hard making the program. We'd want as many people to watch it, so why don't we just make it legally available?
Legit operations are catching up. Last year, the launch of Apple's iTunes made paying for music downloads a reality, and now it includes a range of other items like music videos. And the movie industry has hitched a ride on the bandwagon, with movies slowly coming online. Companies like Disney have done deals to put movies on iTunes. Users still aren't happy about the limited catalogue, but it is expanding. The illegal sites like Kazaa and Napster have both moved towards a paid subscription service after striking deals with the record companies. But it remains to be seen if the TV networks will follow and demand that download sites move to a paid subscription service.
That's Michael Atkin reporting there on how downloading has changed.
You're listening to Hack on Triple J.
And on Hack the Side, we're talking about downloading and where it's all headed. Do you download? Give us a call, 1-300-055-36. Eamon, do you download? How much do you download, I suppose, is the question.
A fair bit, but I don't download any Australian music.
So this is your line in the sand. How do you feel about downloading stuff other than Australian music? Is that, have you got no problem with that?
Well, it's pretty hard when you're on, you know, if you're an apprentice or a student to afford, you know, CDs once a week, but that's more on in the sand. If it's Australian, I'll just wait and buy the CD because, you know, it's a lot harder for Australian bands. It's a smaller population country, so, you know, it's
so you're prepared to support Australian artists. But what about, you know, I guess do you feel that you're stealing from international artists there?
Oh, definitely, but you know, it's not that big a choice when it's, you know, a lot of your friends do it and, you know, you just in your room at home, they're big bands. It doesn't worry you too much.
Would you pay for downloads? Do you use sites that you can download music from and pay?
I don't use them, but I mean, I think it's got to go that way for sure. It's just not realistic the way it is now, but when the option's there and if you love music and there's a song you really love, It's so hard not to do it. But if it's Australian, yeah, I just sort of try and support the local industry a bit.
Thanks very much, Eamon.
No worries, thanks a lot.
Matt, how much Hello. Do you download? You're a musician.
Yeah, I am. So it's a controversial issue. You know, am I stealing from my own kind?
Are you? Well, I mean, you are.
When it comes down to it, the amount that I download only equates to all the cassettes that I used to high-speed dub things. You know, I still buy a record, you know, if it's a band that really strikes me with the money that I can spare per year.
If they deserve it.
Well, it's not so much if they deserve it. It's if it's in my top five for the year, you know, I'm always going to buy the next Radiohead. I'm always going to buy the next Tool. But it didn't stop me from downloading Tool 2 months prior so that I could hear it. Or if the material is there, I'm going to pay for it anyway. It's not that much of an issue.
Do you worry that people won't buy your stuff? They'll just download that?
Well, you know, it's a possibility, of course, but I think that we look towards a new model for TV, for film, for music. We need to look towards a new way of generating the revenue so that it's not soaked up by all the in-between people.
Thanks very much, Matt.
No worries.
We're talking this afternoon on Hack about downloading. Mark Pesci is a lecturer in interactive media at the Australian Film, Television and Radio School and has written half a dozen books on this area. G'day, Mark.
G'day.
So I guess familiar stories. You would have heard that all before. How much of the content that people are downloading now is actually being paid for?
Well, the thing we have to understand is that after a couple of down years, the music industry is now worldwide making more money than it's ever made before. At the same time, there's also clearly more music downloading going on than has ever happened before. So somehow, despite the fact that there's all this piracy, there's still a lot of money being made by a lot of people, particularly record companies as opposed to the artists.
So what are people paying for when they're downloading it?
Well, often, I mean, people will buy singles that maybe come out. Certainly Apple's been very good about getting a band, say Wolfmother, to do a specific single and put it up on iTunes, and this is the one place you can get it. Now those things, of course, immediately do show up for download on all the other download services. And people will buy albums, perhaps things that they can't get locally because it's not in their local shops, and so it's a way for people to get those things. It's unclear how much music on any given iPod has actually been legally paid for versus pirated. You hear that there might be as low as 5% of the music that's on someone's iPod actually came through a legal channel.
Well, there was a study earlier, was it last month, in Europe, but how do we rate? Do we know how we rate in Australia?
With respect to music, Australians are probably about the equivalent as they would be in America or in Europe. They're not more given to downloading music. With television, it's a completely different matter. But with music, they're pretty much sort of on an even keel with the rest of the world.
Because do we download the most TV of anyone?
Per capita, Australia is twice as much as the next country, which is Great Britain.
And why is that?
Well, it's because
Twice
as much. We're at the end of the chain. It's because we are beholden to all of the programmers and the broadcasters about when shows get shown or if they even get shown. And when you've become a fan of a TV series, really the only thing you care about is watching the next episode. You don't care how you get it. You're just going to watch it.
And so all of that TV downloading, is all of that's illegal?
Probably, yes. This is a gray area. It hasn't really ever been tested in the law. I don't think that anyone's ever been sued by a television producer for actually downloading a TV show, unlike the music industry. So, yes, it probably is, but there's a couple of really good examples of shows that have been pirated, and then when they were broadcast to air for the first time, they were enormously popular because so many people had seen the pirated versions that they told their friends, and so their friends tuned in.
What are the TV stations? See, clearly there can be an advantage in terms of promoting shows, but what are the TV networks doing to try and combat them, I guess, getting the shows for free, getting the whole shows for free?
Well, what we've seen now with 10 is showing Jericho. Jericho is airing exactly the same time in the United States as it is in Australia. I mean, maybe it's being offset by a day or something. So there's no incentive for people to go out and download it, all right, because you're just going to be able to watch it on 10. And so that's exactly it. So rather than having this sort of what they call the window of distribution where shows in America first and then maybe in the UK and then maybe later in Australia, everything's going to be released internationally. They're doing this with motion pictures now for precisely this reason. You run Superman or you run Titanic or whatever it would be internationally on the same day because then there's no incentive to pirate the movie.
Emily.
Hi.
You think downloading is just plain wrong?
Yeah, look, I'm not really a huge fan of it. It's really hard not to let it cross into your life as, you know, you're talking with mates and stuff about films especially, and then for some reason you're getting handed a burnt copy from or a downloaded copy from the internet. I, as an actor, don't think it's okay. I don't think the revenue, in terms of music as well, the revenue doesn't go to the artist.
So how much of your music collection is bought
it's
CDs?
Actually, all of it. I am probably, that's why I thought I'd bring up, only because I feel like I'm probably one of the only people in the world that doesn't download. I never have. I never used
Kazaa. Did you make mixtapes?
Look, I did when I was young. Yeah, I did. I suppose it's the same thing, but I just feel that it's stealing. I do. I feel that it is piracy and that we are stopping people getting paid.
Thanks very much, Emily. Mark, how would you respond to that? Well, do you think people should take a strong ethical stance on this?
I think that people should take a strong ethical stance about making sure that the artist is the person at the end of the value chain is getting paid. We all know how that works in the music industry. We all know that, you know, for every $1.49 that you're spending on iTunes when you buy a signal, you're lucky that 5 cents of it actually makes its way back to the artist and everything else gets sucked
up. That's a bit of an ethical cop-out though, isn't it?
No, well, there are other systems that are being set up. There's Magnatune, which is a distribution site for classical music. And you can go there and you can buy their albums and you can actually determine how much money is going to you're going to pay for the album. They'll take a range, right? And if you really like it, you can give them more money or you can give them less money. And they will also tell you how much money is going back to the artist. So it's not an ethical cop-out because you can choose to put your dollars in downloaded music into choices that are ethical.
Of course, in music, we have seen some legal wrestling already in downloading. Record companies say they've won a battle against music file sharing or peer-to-peer after Kazaa was knocked out last year. But as you've already heard, there are still millions of people getting the new Killers or the latest Jet track illegally through other peer-to-peer sites as well. And heaps of music and TV shows using technology like BitTorrent. So if you're downloading episodes of Lost or the latest Pirates of the Caribbean movie, is it just a matter of time before Hollywood comes after you? Ronan Sharkey's been taking a look at where the next big downloading legal battles might be happening.
YouTube is very hot right now. In less than a year online, it's shot to number 10 on the Alexa web tracking list of the most popular sites in the world. YouTube says it provides about 70 million videos every day. But there is a big legal question hanging over the site. Because lots of YouTube videos come from movies and TV shows, licensed content you're not paying for, that's normally a green light for the big media companies to bring in the lawyers. And there have been threats of legal action already. A few weeks ago, Universal Studios said YouTube and the other big player, MySpace, owe Universal tens of millions of dollars for copyright breach. But days after Universal made the threat, one of its big rivals, Warner Music, went the other way and signed a deal with YouTube to put music videos up on the site. So is that where the next big legal battle in downloading is going to happen? When Hack put that question to a few downloading boffins, most said the question of legal action isn't really the question anymore.
More and more we'll see the bigger players like 9MSN and Fox Media coming in buying out these media properties.
You know, in many ways the internet and the world is too big for these companies to expect that, you know, they'll be able to take American law and impose it everywhere.
I can't see substantial legal battles happening along the lines of the Kazaa case. But what I would imagine happening is that there'll be lots of smaller battles. Perhaps there'll be battles over BitTorrent, other forms of new technology use, other forms of downloading.
The major labels have started to get more savvy generally about using the internet as a promotional vehicle, allowing users in many cases to post to sites like YouTube and saying, well, we'll let the copyright stuff work itself out later because this makes a lot of sense for us in terms of promotion.
Everyone who's worked in the downloading industry, if you can call it that, has their own opinions about the next big issues. Andrew Apostolo runs the Portable Film Festival, which promotes free content for portable video devices like handhelds or laptops. He reckons big media companies are now looking for ways to make money out of popular sites, like Rupert Murdoch's News Corporation, which last year bought MySpace.
There's a talk about, okay, what happens when Murdoch suddenly decides to make people pay for using MySpace. And I don't think that's ever really going to be a case because I think people like Rupert Murdoch realise that, you know, there's a reason why people are at this site because it is free and the internet is intrinsically sort of works best if it's free. You know, I'm not going to pay, you know, $1, $5 or $100 for to have my MySpace profile on MySpace. Like, I'll move to another site.
We can find food. There are plenty of things on this island we can use for sustenance.
And Andrew Apostola says one of the ways big companies will make money is by showing ads, and he reckons young internet users are okay with that.
I think that older generations had a lot more issues with advertising and sponsorship. But I think, you know, if you're looking at people who are aged, you know, under 27 now and who've grown up with the net and using things like YouTube, they're used to it. And I think that that advertising for the use of sites and for downloading is a viable business model and people are already making money out of it.
But what about the question of getting cash to the people who created the content? Some reckon it's not only the illegal sites that are ripping off artists. Holmes Wilson is from the non-profit music activism site downhillbattle.org in the US.
When you purchase a song from a service like iTunes, it's very likely that the artist gets no money at all, just something you should remember.
So would that still be the case, though? Surely the artists, even when they're signed to a major label, even when they've got a lot of money to recoup, they would still be getting some benefit.
Yeah, but in many cases, and we know some bands that are in this situation, you know, their album's been number one on iTunes for a few weeks, but they know for a fact they're never, ever, ever going to recoup. It's just a foregone conclusion. Independent labels in this new environment are starting to do better and better, and it's becoming easier and easier for musicians to cultivate a direct relationship with their fans and make just as good a living selling, you know, 10 times less CDs.
Alex Malik's a technology lawyer from Sydney, and he says the other issues about legit sites in Australia are the cost of music and the availability.
Well, the typical price of a digital download in Australia for a song is between $1.69 and $1.89. It's more expensive than some countries, cheaper than others, significantly more expensive than the US. Let's say you want to purchase a digital download and it's not available from the Australian services. So when you see an advertisement about the latest television show, the latest song being available for download, read means only available from the US, not from Australia.
But maybe it's not all about what users are getting charged and whether they'll start having to pay for things like MySpace or YouTube. Andrew Apostolo from the Portable Film Festival reckons things could go the other way.
There's a site called Revver that came out late last year, and their premise is they're paying for content. You put your content up online, and based on click-throughs from your video piece, your music video, or your home video, you receive revenue.
What about the ways that you might be getting your content in future? Some reckon internet TV is the go. That's where your computer becomes a TV that downloads all the programs and videos you want for free from the net. Nicholas Revel is from PCF, the non-profit Participatory Culture Foundation in the US. They're working on improving an application for internet TV called Democracy, which is already available online.
Democracy Player is an application we make that lets you subscribe to channels of internet video. And it's really trying to take an open source and open standards approach to internet video, seeing that as really the place where TV is moving to. And there's really an amazing opportunity to ensure that when TV goes online, it is open and democratic and accessible to everybody, and not end up in a world where, you know, a few major corporations control all video online.
So tell us how it'll work.
It's both about tools that make it easy to publish your videos, and it's about easily being able to search for channels that are interesting to you, subscribe to them, and share the videos that you like, share the channels that you like. It's about turning your computer into both a television and a TV broadcasting machine.
That's Nicholas Revel from an American non-profit organization called the Participatory Culture Foundation. And he was talking there about an internet TV application called Democracy, which just happens to blow me away.
Triple J's Hack with Cato Tool.
Well, Ben, you reckon that downloading hasn't stopped you from spending money on films and music?
No, I mean, it's obviously a delicate point, but I think the last few years with the access I've had to being able to download more and more music and probably wasting more and more time at work instead of actually working, listening to music, it's probably made me actually go and buy more stuff. The biggest example would have been Muse, you know, a few years ago. I downloaded their first two albums for free. Obviously didn't pay for that, but since then I've bought them two recent. I've gone to one of their shows and I'm going to another show. So, I mean, for me, they've probably got, you know, over $200-$250 as a direct result. And even the fact that now I can go and listen to more and more stuff. So on MySpace, I've bought lots of local bands, EPs, you know, online, and they're getting the money directly from that. So I think it's a good thing in that sense.
Thanks very much, Ben. Brendan, where do you think this is all heading, Brendan? Oh. Brendan's clearly... Oh, hang on a minute. Here we go. Try again. Brendan?
G'day.
Yes, sorry about that.
Right, I'm with you.
Where do you think this is all heading?
Oh, firstly, I'd just like to entirely agree with you last year. I think, like, downloading stuff, it gives you a taste of the media, and then that and you develop a new appreciation. And I think, like, this whole argument of loss of revenue is complete fallacy. I think if you look at it, you'll see, like, a lot of shows actually owe their success or even actually existence to the popularity of downloaded content.
But what about the people who never pay and who make a point of never paying and even invest heaps of money in getting all the right technology so that they don't have to pay?
Well, that's true. I would like to preface this by saying that I, like many other Australians, do download a significant amount of content, but I'd like to say that's ethical. Like your speaker earlier said, you have to make sure the creator, the artistic talent comes out on top. And I think a lot of people, like the head of JB Hi-Fi, has come out in support of Download. And I think what has to be done is you have to take the stigma away from downloading. It's not necessarily illegal. Downloading content is simply the acquisition of kilobytes upon kilobytes that that forms like digital information, be it good or bad. And you know, you've got sites like YouTube now, which makes available content which is rated merely on its quality and interest to other users. You have programs like Battlestar Galactica, which you can download the official thing as soon as it's released on TV. You can go to the website, download it, and that partly was reason for its success. It was when it was released in the UK.
Excellent point, Brendan. We might actually pick up that the YouTube argument. Mark Pesci, who's the founder of Future Street, which is a media and technology consultancy. He's speaking with me about downloading this afternoon. Mark, do you think YouTube's going to go down?
YouTube is a really interesting situation because on one hand, Universal, which is the largest music copyright holder in the world, is threatening a lawsuit to end the mother of all lawsuits, because people are putting up music videos which have clips in them, or they're scoring their own little movies to music that they own. On the other hand, Warner, which is a large music copyright holder, is going to start distributing its music videos through YouTube. So it's as if the entire world is now confused. They see 100 million videos a day, 60% of all the videos online, all right? 200 terabytes of video data coming out of YouTube every single day.
Do you think it's possible that it could go down, though? I mean, the mother of all lawsuits, do you think it, you know,
well,
is it in danger?
2 weeks ago, they announced that they were worth $1.5 billion if anyone wanted to buy them. And people think, well, Murdoch probably wants to buy them. Maybe a couple of other companies do, but they're afraid of that lawsuit. And so essentially what we're seeing now is maybe this dance where Universal actually probably doesn't want to sue YouTube out of existence so much as they want to stick a straw in and start sucking money out of it. So perhaps this threat of a lawsuit is part of a legal negotiation that's happening behind closed doors, similar to
buy it.
Or to at least work with them, similar to what Warner was doing. And then this was the rattling of the sword, and now is going to come the carrot.
So can we be confident that YouTube won't go? Because otherwise, if it did go, what would happen then?
If it was driven out of business the same way Napster was, what we'll see is that alternative technologies, and I think democracy, which was in the last little segment, is going to be the thing that really starts to take off, because democracy is decentralized in the same way that Kazaa was decentralized rather than Napster, which was centralized. In that same way, if they drive YouTube away, what we're going to see is instead of one centralized service delivering all this information everywhere, we're going to have millions of PCs connected over the internet, each of which is going to have the list of their 10 funniest cute little videos, and they're going to have them all available in one gigantic heap. And it's going to be impossible for any copyright holder to stamp that out.
And what is that going to do to TV?
Well, it means that we're going to be getting our TV from a whole bunch of different sources. We're going to be getting it from broadcast, but we're also going to be getting it from the computer. And Apple's going to introduce something called the iTV next year, which is going to finally tie the computer and the television set together so that you're going to be able to watch things on the television set even though they're on the computer.
And are other companies going to be able to compete with that?
Well, people haven't been able to compete with the iPod so far. We're going to have to see if anyone can follow Apple's lead on this. I'm sure they'll try.
And Warren, what's your take on all of this?
Oh, yeah, very interesting topic, actually. It's just funny you should be talking about this, because I've just come from my brother's place to collect some TV shows he's downloaded, so there you go. No, I just wanted to talk about my motivation for actually downloading the TV shows, and it's basically the TV networks pissed me off. So I just want to stick it to them, really, and it's also about convenience.
Why do they piss you off so much,
Warren? Well, I started last year when Nine, and I don't know if I'm allowed to mention it, but one of their shows, they messed with the ending, you know, they did the cliffhanger thing when it was supposed to be a double episode, and so I went and downloaded it, and I started from there, and I thought I'd never look back, and the convenience is just unreal. I can watch it when I want, you know, when I feel like it. Now that there's DVD players that support the format that they come in, you know, I just burn them to a disc and watch them when I feel like it, without the ads.
Thanks very much, Warren. It's pretty convenient, isn't it? So what is TV going to go on demand like that? Or, you know, are we getting any indication from the networks that they're forward thinking on this?
Well, I mean, obviously all of the networks in America are starting to offer downloads to Americans on their websites with ads. You can get all these shows generally on iTunes in America. The question is what that does for Australians, because Australians are still sitting here going, what, we don't count? You've made us all excited about these shows. We want to grab them. And until there are a lot of avenues for you to get those shows, you're going to continue to download them.
That's it. Well, in the short term, enjoy keeping on downloading them. Thanks very much, Mark Pesci from Future Street Media and Technology Consultancy for coming in and talking to us about downloading today. Don't forget, of course, that we love you to download Hack, and you can do that from our website, triplej.net.au/hack. Thanks very much to everyone who called in today. And if you've got anything else to say, you can hit that website as well. And thanks to Ronan for setting up the show. Rosie's in next, news time, 6 o'clock. Triple J.